Welcome to Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where we talk everything fitness, nutrition and mindset with your host, Brian Keane.
Hey everybody, quick intro into today's episode. I'm so excited to have my guest, Danny Lennon from Sigma Nutrition. I know a lot of you probably already listen to his podcast, Sigma Nutrition Radio, so if you're not listening to that, definitely check him out. Danny's the CEO of Sigma Nutrition and Performance. He's got a scientific background in academia, completed a master's in nutritional science. So we've done a lot of talk on nutrition in this episode, things like misconceptions, how to keep your carbohydrates high to lose fat loss, and Danny's theory on insulin, and a lot of amazing tips with myths and misconceptions that have all been negated in the science community, and Danny's own real life experience with it, with either himself or with his clients. So he's provided so much value in this. So a massive thank you for Danny to coming on. I hope you guys get loads of value from this episode. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where we talk everything fitness, nutrition and mindset to help you with your goals. I'm so excited today to have my guest with me, Danny Lennon. Danny is the CEO of Sigma Nutrition and Performance. He has a formal scientific background in academia, completing a master's in nutritional science at UCC. As well as producing media content, Danny also works as a performance nutritionist to professional MMA fighters, professional boxers, and competitive powerlifters. He is also an online coaching service that helps a wide array of clients with nutrition-related issues, and he is the host of the top podcast, Sigma Nutrition Radio, which everybody should check out. Outside of nutrition, Danny is a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu blue belt, a raw powerlifter, and most importantly, a fellow lifelong Arsenal fan. So, Danny, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it, mate.
Man, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for asking me on.
Awesome. So, that's a kind of a brief background of you, Danny. There's so much I could have gone into. Is there anything else that you want to tell my audience about that you think will give you a bit more background into you?
No, I think you cover everything there. Unless there's anything specific you want to get into, I think usually when people ask, I think the real short version is ended up doing a degree in science education, taught for a year, ended up going back to do a master's in nutrition, and a few years later, here we are. So
awesome.
I'm happy to dive into anything you want, though.
Deadly. Okay, so just to kind of give a bit more of a background, what got you into fitness first? Because I know your background, you've got Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, powerlifting. I know you used to play football. You've got a little bit of everything in the background. What got you into fitness first?
Yeah, so like you said, I think it's probably a very similar story to a lot of people. Played a lot of sports growing up. That was my main kind of hobby. Played a ton of soccer. Played a good bit of Gaelic football during my teens. And then when I went to college around 18, 19, took up some MMA and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and kind of put more of my focus towards those. And so really my kind of shift towards nutrition and then kind of training really came as a kind of byproduct of, okay, how do I get better performance for these sports? How do I get better out on the pitch? How do I get better on the mats when I'm training? And so the time I started trying to look into how to improve my performance came around the same time I was in college studying science. So I was learning how to read research papers, look at different journals and get firsthand papers on different aspects of performance. So really outside of college, just as a hobby, I would start reading about how do I improve my performance. And so obviously came across a ton of sports nutrition stuff, got really interested in learning about that. And then from there, really just kept learning more and more and got really fascinated by nutrition. And that's how it came about that in the end, I decided, okay, I'm learning about this all in my own time anyway. Why don't I just go full on and make something out of this? And so then ended up, yeah, going back to study nutrition full time then. And but yeah, really my interest in training and nutrition all stemmed from that, really just from trying to get better athletically as I could. I think the same way as a lot of us do, get in, just try and get better at our sport. And then from there, we obviously find interesting things along the way. And that's certainly how it's kind of unraveled for me, I think, yeah.
Brilliant. Your master's in nutrition, was it in vitamin D? Am I right in saying it was in vitamin D? Did I read that?
Yes. So it was a broad master's in that there was a taught component, so various different classes, physiology, biochemistry, nutrient metabolism, and so on. And then there was a research component to that as well. So for the research component, I looked at, yeah, vitamin D within the Irish population. And that was under Professor Kevin Cashman, someone who was very lucky to study under.
Yeah.
So for, like, if anyone researches vitamin D papers, you type those into Google, you'll see his name pop up in a ton of those papers. So, I was lucky to get in and study under him. And, yeah, that was part of the research there.
Awesome. All right. We're going to come back to the nutrition stuff in a bit because I just want to pick your brain on so much. Because anyone that listens to Danny's podcast, which I know a lot of you do, his nutrition stuff is just on point. So I'm going to die to pick your brain on it. Just to get a bit more into you first, Danny, you're always on the go, and you've so much with the successful podcast, your speaking, your things that you organize, your work, your online courses, everything, your book, the MMA, cutting, making weight, all of these things. Normally people have some form of routine in the morning that kind of sets them up for the day. For someone that's as successful as yourself, what does your first hour or 90 minutes of the day look like?
Yeah, that's it's a good question. And I think it's one of the things people often kind of associate with people are doing something well, that they have some sort of routine. For me, most of my days tend to be fairly different, depending on whether it's a day where I'm going to be doing podcasts, or whether it's an editing day, or whether I'm coaching more of my clients. So typically, I try and break it into different types of days rather than the same routine every day. So most of the client interaction I have will be on a Monday, because typically they send me a check-in on a Sunday, for example, and then I'll leave times on Monday evenings and Fridays to, say, record. So it depends on the type of day. But in general, I think I'm not one of the people that's really good at getting up super early and like having a perfect morning routine like I know we should, and then having like all the stuff I'd like to do and then start working at like 7 a.m. I'm just no good for it. I just like sleep too much. And I just find I kind of get productive as the day goes on. So even late into the night. So I'd have no problem working on stuff real late into the night as I could, as long as I can get to sleep and just kind of wake up as I need to. So most times I'll end up waking anywhere between like 8 a.m., 9 in the morning. So it's not early by any stretch of the imagination. From there, it's usually I'll go down, grab myself some coffee. If I've work to do, I'll try to make a plan of what I want to do for the day. Do a block of work in the morning. And then the middle part of the day is usually when I train. So early afternoon, I'll get a few hours training done, and then come back in the evening and have like a second block to do. So again, just depending on the day, but I'm probably not the best person to ask about like being super productive, because like I was mentioning to you off air, I always have this feeling of, oh, there's more I should be doing, or there's people doing way more than me, or like I have these tasks to do. So I definitely can improve organization wise. It's just been a matter of, I think I've only got lucky because I've put a lot of hours into work, but how organized they are, I don't know. I just tend to work as long as I can each day, but not necessarily have an organized structure. So I don't know if I'm as useful in that.
No, I love that, because it's funny. I do have a conversation with Paul, who came, one of the guys that came through my mentorship program, and he's the complete opposite to me. I've got my entire 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. block where I get everything done, and he's very similar to you. So I know there's people out there that have a different chronotype in terms of when they wake up, and they'll function completely different. So it's nice to hear that your productivity gets done. Even though it's completely different to mine, it just shows that you still get your shit done, which is
right. Yeah. And I mean, yeah, that was a big thing for me to hear that first, because it was the same. I was like, oh man, I'm going to have to get up at like 5 o'clock every morning, and like seeing all these successful people, like all of them seem to be saying, get up early. And then I think it was Tim Ferriss saying like, he's one of these people that just works until like 2 or 3 a.m., does loads of his writing at nighttime, and then just sleeps in later in the morning. I was like, oh, at least there's one person that seems to be doing something right and it is not necessarily getting up at 5 in the morning. But I think it's just whatever suits the person when you can be productive. So yeah, that's how I will find out.
Well, that's it. It's doubling down on your own strengths. And for everything that you do, Danny, I think that's a great message for anyone that thinks they have to get up at 5 a.m. You don't. If you're getting things done, it doesn't matter whether you do them at 5 a.m. or 5 p.m. If your most important tasks get done, it's irrelevant when they get done, as long as they're done by the deadline.
You know? Right, exactly, yeah.
So just out of my own curiosity now, with your training at the minute, are you someone that follows a very, very strict, because I know from a powerlifting background and a jiu-jitsu background, do you follow a very strict training program in terms of you know what you're doing each day, or have you a little bit of training ADHD where you switch it up? What works best for you? What do you normally do?
Yeah, so my training is fairly well structured in that there's typically 5 sessions per week. I'll know for the week coming what I've got to do, what sessions are coming up. And then on a week-to-week basis, I may change on what day they actually happen. So if I'm going to be away on a Saturday, then that session gets shifted to a Sunday, for example, and then the following Monday gets changed to a rest day, something like that. But in general, for each kind of block of training, so every 4-week block, I'll have a general idea of what that looks like. And it kind of at a broader sense then, for a longer period of time, I'll know roughly what each of the subsequent blocks will look like, but just not in as much detail. So in a week, I know what I've got to get done at the start of the week, but I'm a bit more flexible in terms of if I go on a certain day and I'm short on time, I'll get my main 2 movements done. And then any of the rest of the stuff that doesn't have time to do, I'll just shift them towards the end of a different workout. So try not to be super rigid in that. I have to train on these days at these times to get these exact exercises done on those days in this order. It's a bit more flexible as long as, like you say, I get the work done over the course of that week. So I've got a pretty good idea each week what I get done, and just trying to manage to fit that in.
I love that. That's it's funny because we're complete opposites in terms of, I get up in the morning, I've everything done work wise, and I've really bad training ADHD. And it seems like you've got the reverse of that. So it's a nice little contrast to have. I love it. Okay, Danny, as I mentioned earlier, your nutrition stuff's amazing. Like, I know you're big on the academia side and supporting everything that you say in nutrition. What are kind of the three biggest nutrition or supplements, because I know you're having supplements too, myths that you see or advice you see being dispensed that you think that's not the best thing that should be floating around the internet right now?
Yeah, I mean, there's probably a whole different way we could attack this question, but I think generally most of the misconceptions people have stems from the idea that there's one best way to do it. And like, there's one diet out there that's going to be the answer for me, or everyone should be doing this particular diet. And I think that's just not correct. And so what I've tended to try and talk about quite a lot is the idea of using principles rather than methods, because we know that there's tons of different types of diets out there, and you can find examples of all sorts of people who have been successful on them and other people who have failed on them. So really, all diets to some extent work, especially if we're talking about, say, fat loss, which is what most people start on for, right? They're going to work as long as they stick to a few core principles. And the method you use doesn't really matter. So you should just pick whatever is your preference and what you're going to stick to. So we know, for example, no matter what diet you choose, if you want to lose body fat over time, there has to be a calorie deficit. There's no way around that. So whether you want to do that by tracking your calories and macros to make sure you're in a deficit, sure, you can do that. If you don't want to, maybe you do on something like you change your portion size around, or maybe you track your calories via using a point system like Weight Watchers, or you switch to a low carb diet, which means you end up eating less calories overall, so you lose weight. There's a ton of different ways to do it, but they're all sticking to the same principles. So I think the biggest myth is that there's one best way to do it. And then from there, I mean, there's a whole host of things that tie into that around any of the popular diets that people talk about and get very dogmatic about, this is the one way, tends to come from a misconception that some of those things are needed for success. So, for example, if we're talking about fat loss, people that say everyone should be on a gluten-free diet, that without that you can't be healthy. I mean, that's something that isn't based in evidence. That, sure, you may have done better on a gluten-free diet, or you might know people who do better or feel better, and that's fine. But to say that you need to be on a gluten-free diet or everyone needs to be is not factually correct. Similarly, to say that you need to lower your carb intake to lose body fat, again, that's not technically correct. As long as those principles are in place, you're in a calorie deficit, and let's say you're generally active and you're eating enough protein, then whether you go on a more moderate to high-ish carb intake because you prefer that versus going a low carb intake shouldn't really make too much of a difference. So the fact that there's no one way to do it. And I think some of those ideas are just like, yeah, this is the one diet. I need to go on a ketogenic diet to lose weight, or it needs to be gluten-free for everyone. Anything that's an absolute statement is probably where a misconception lies. So they're the biggest things I see, is typically when someone talks in absolutes, that's usually when there's probably something that we can count as maybe a myth or a misconception or whatever, or at least something that's not entirely accurate when someone talks in absolutes.
Yeah, no, I love that. That's great advice, because the truth is, if there was only one diet or one nutritional plan for fat loss that worked, everybody would follow that, and then everyone would have the body composition they wanted. So.
Right, for sure. And I mean, then no other diet would work, but we know pretty much an example of everyone who can lose weights on all sorts of diets. Yeah. And it just doesn't work by the same principles. So, yeah.
And as you said, finding what works best for you, because again, people will have preferences. And I fell victim of this in the past, where when something works for you, you tend to get dogmatic about your approach. It's something that I've done a lot of work on myself over the last 6, 7, 8 months, where you don't get so attached to ideas, because the truth is everything works. It's all about the perspective of that, like how that person applies it. And as you said, those core principles are crucial, and it's just kind of building it into your plan around that.
Sure. I mean, when you look at like the studies on weight loss, particularly in long term for most people. Like, it's pretty bleak in how people maintain weight that they have lost. So there was a great line. I was at a seminar a few years ago, and Lane Norton was doing a talk, and he led with the line that he said something to the effect of, "We don't have a weight loss problem. We have a weight maintenance problem." And that's essentially it, right? If you think of every person who has struggled with weight or hasn't been able to achieve body composition they want, they've done something in the past where they've lost some degree of weight. It's not like it's impossible. They've done a crazy detox diet and they dropped 5 pounds in a few days. They went on some type of diet for 2 weeks. And when they stuck to it, it worked, right? So people can lose weight. But the real problem is, how do you lose weight, get to a body composition you want, and then maintain that for a long period of time? That's the difficulty. And so when we're trying to work out the big piece of the puzzle for anyone is to work out, okay, how do I comply with these principles? How do I create dietary adherence? And that's why it's important to set up something that you think you can sustain for a long period of time, or that you find enjoyable, or something that fits your work schedule or your work commitments, or that fits in with your family life or social occasion you're going to do. Because if it can fit in all that stuff, then you can make it sustainable and you can adhere to that diet. If it doesn't, then it's more likely that, yeah, you may make some progress initially, but then as soon as it stops working, then you're going to kind of go back to square one. So we know that the number one component to look at is dietary adherence. Doesn't matter exactly which specific diet approach you pick, as long as it's the one that is going to likely be allow you to stick to those principles the best. And so that's what it comes down to. I think, like you said, I was the exact same. I think every coach starting out is the same, that you find something and it works for you. And it's hard not to think, wow, you know what? If everyone just did this, imagine the success we'd have, right? I found it. Like, I've done this. I know it works. So if I can just get into this person's head, do this, and I know it's going to work for you. But that's just a false way of thinking, because it doesn't take into account that we're working with human beings with very different psychologies, personal lives, all the other variables that go into how likely it's going to stick to something. And so, like you said, you find over time, and the more and more clients you work with, that it really just becomes this like troubleshooting process of, okay, here's this person, their circumstances. What is the most likely things that we can do and change that this person now going to stick to some generally better guidelines that's going to progress them in the right way? And so that's what it's been a shift over time for me as well. And that's kind of where I'm at now, of how do we fit this around the person as opposed to get them to stick to a particular type of diet.
Yeah, that's key. I love it. And I've seen that approach from listening to your podcast and listening to you in general. It's finding what works best for your lifestyle, your schedule, with foods you enjoy that you can stick to, and then doubling down on that and making that work as your nutrition. That's awesome advice. Danny, I'm going to reframe the question slightly. Because of where you're at now in terms of with your master's, your business, your own competing, everything, if you could go back to your 17, 18-year-old self and give yourself any advice, whether that be nutrition, mindset-wise, psychology-wise, business-wise, whatever it is, what advice would you offer the 17-year-old or 18-year-old Danny Lynn?
Oh, man, that's a really good question. I definitely think that if I go back to my like 17-year-old self, around training and nutrition, definitely, I would send myself a couple of resources that I think really boil down, like I said, those key principles, and tell myself not to get so dialed into all these small little details that might be interesting, but in the grand scheme of things are largely irrelevant. And so I would pick something like Eric Helms' two pyramid books. So he wrote one for training and one nutrition. If people aren't aware of them, they should check those out.
What's the name of those books?
So it's the Muscle and Strength Pyramids by Eric Helms. And essentially, he boils the two down to a pyramid of the different principles that affect body composition and performance, say for nutrition, in a kind of hierarchy of what matters most. So at the bottom being overall energy balance or calories. And then next step up is macronutrients. Next step up is micronutrients. Next step up is nutrient timing. And then at the very top, a very small fraction is supplementation. So just lays out in a very clear manner what the stuff that you need to focus on is. There's some outstanding stuff in the whole book, so people should read it. But if I had just a clear understanding of, okay, doing these things is going to kind of get you to where you want to be in your nutrition and your training, these core things, focus on them and then kind of ignore the little details that we've all done it, right? We've done crazy things when we look back on our different diets we've tried, different crazy training protocols we've used that we still go say, well, what was I doing? Like, you know? So if I could get rid of those and maybe just, if I knew now what I did about nutrition training and just started applying it back then, I'd probably be in a lot better position, I think.
That's awesome. I love that. I'm going to link those books in the show notes as well, because I know there's a lot of 17, 18-year-olds listening. So you've just got your learning curve shortened massively. So thank you, Danny.
Hey everyone, this is Brian from the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast. I just want to take a quick 90 seconds to thank you all for downloading the podcast and tell you about my 6-week top 50 online program. It still blows my mind to see the thousands of downloads every week, so thank you all so much. What if I told you you could lose body fat, build muscle, or tone up all without putting your life on hold? One of the things that irks me in fitness is people saying that you need to train for an hour and a half every day or do loads of cardio to get in good shape, or silly things like you need to avoid putting milk in your coffee or completely eliminate alcohol or else you're going to get fat. The truth is, you can get into incredible shape by eating certain foods, timing your meals properly, and following a training program that is in exact alignment with your specific goals. And you can do this without putting your life on hold. The right program should fit into your lifestyle and schedule and not the other way around. Whether you're a guy or a girl, think about how good it would feel losing body fat and building muscle or toning up, all because you have the right systems in place. You didn't have to starve yourself, you didn't have to spend hours and hours in the gym, or even try and piece together different workouts and nutritional plans together yourself in the hope that they worked. With my top 50 program, you'll have a full blueprint on how to best time your meals, what foods to eat, all your macro calculations, and different recipes to help keep you on track. My philosophy on nutrition is to help you find the strategies, foods, and systems that work best for your lifestyle and goal, so your diet just becomes the way you eat and not a diet you're following. Also, have you ever found yourself thinking, am I doing this exercise right? Or is this the best way to lose fat, tone up, or build muscle? I remember that feeling too well. Imagine the peace of mind knowing exactly how to do every exercise at home or in the gym, and knowing that your training program is in exact alignment with your specific goals, and seeing your body composition change as a result. Everyone has different nutritional preferences, lifestyles, and schedules, and my Top 50 program is the only program where I work with each person through the Top 50 Facebook group. Here I do weekly Q&As with everyone in the program, and this is where we can tweak and adapt training and nutrition to make the program perfect for you. Not only that, but you'll also have one of my online coaches working with you Monday to Friday to make sure that there's no stone left unturned in getting you into amazing shape. Every program is capped to 50 people, so once the group hits 50 people, it closes until the next round. So for more information or to sign up for the next 6-week Top 50 online program, head over to my website, www.briankeenfitness.com, or email me on brian@briankeenfitness.com. And thanks again for listening.
All right, Danny, this is my favorite part of the show. I'm going to throw a couple of rapid-fire questions at you. So you can expand on these. You can one-word answer them. If you think you provide more value, you can go off on one if you want. It's completely up to you. Ready for it?
I'm ready. I will just warn you, I'm not good with short answers. I tend to ramble a bit.
That's fine. Well, then you ramble
me off
away
at any stage if you want.
All right, first question. When you think of the word successful, who's the first person that comes to mind and why?
Ooh. I'll go for a bit of a fluffy answer and say my dad, just purely because as a person overall and how he treats people is really good. And for me, I think that's what most of us can look towards. It doesn't matter what else you do, is if you treat people okay and just on a day-to-day basis, you're not causing any unnecessary suffering to people, then that's probably the best we can do with life and just try and help other people. So I would think of him because he, to me, is one person I've seen up front that does that all the time. So I'll go with him.
Awesome. I love it. What purchase of €100 or less has most positively affected your life in the last 6 months?
Let me think. That's a good question. I don't know, man. I would probably say, like, I buy books fairly regularly, so I would say something like that. I would probably say, yeah, maybe a book that I would have bought. I'm trying to think of a good example. I've got tons of books I can talk about. Maybe I'll try and give you a better answer.
I actually will expand on that because it kind of leads into the next one. I think we can tie these both together.
Is
there one book that you think everybody on the planet should read, beside obviously your own one that you have on the website, one that's outside of it in any area that you recommend that you think most people on the planet could benefit from reading this book?
Yeah, there's one called Stumbling on Happiness by Daniel Gilbert, I think, is the guy's name.
Yeah.
So I think he's a researcher that's done a ton of stuff looking at the research around happiness. If people don't like reading, the audiobook version is amazing as well. He reads it himself.
Yeah.
So that book had a big impact on me because I think it's very different to a lot of the like self-help guru type stuff of just like, so like these fake little tips and techniques of be happy in 10 seconds, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's more based on actual research we see, but it really reframes things about what actually happiness is and how to construct that. So that was a big one for me, and I think it would apply most to most people.
Yeah, I'm going to back Danny up on that one. That book changed my entire perspective on that a lot of happiness comes from experiences as opposed to external things that can be taken away. And he talks a lot of, there's a lot of scientific research, but he makes it very, very accessible in the way he puts it across. Yeah, amazing. But I'm going to link that in the show notes as well. Okay, next question. Do you have a quote you live by or think of often?
There's a few, and the first one that comes to mind is actually one that was said by a guy, Ryan Doris. So for people who don't know Ryan Doris, he was like a champion natural bodybuilder. He then became a kind of powerlifter, has worked with like DeNova Nutrition and stuff in the past. Really, really cool guy. Had him on my podcast before, and it really like insightful kind of philosophical stuff he talks about. But I remember he kind of posted something, I think maybe on social media before, and it was just a really great line that hit me. And it was something to the effect of, there's nothing more that I despise than people who are obsessed with themselves, but nothing more I love than people who are obsessed with their craft. Something to that effect. And I think it just kind of summed up to me of like, when we think about this idea of obsession, we can often think it's a bad thing, but I think it's the complete opposite. It's about, we have to find something to be obsessed about, right? If you're kind of just moderate about everything and don't get obsessed or really into anything, you're kind of just like floating on, like not finding something you really love. So it's more about where you focus that obsession. So focus on something you actually love and gives you something value back, and then give all your energy to that, forget everything else. So that kind of quote springs to mind.
I love that. That's a very a different way I've heard of that people have spoken about obsession. But when you channel it like that and you put it with that quote, that really lands and really resonates. I must check him out. I haven't followed his stuff, but I'm going to be checking him out.
Definitely, man. He's a cool guy.
Awesome. Okay, Danny, what is something that you've changed your mind about in the last few years? For example, I had this, it's not a misconception, it was just a thought process of high volume training. And I was like, well, everybody should do high volume training because high volume training works and changes body composition. And I realized, obviously, as you go on, you're like, well, it depends on the person. That's not necessarily true. Is there anything over the last few years that you've changed your mind about?
Yeah, I mean, over past God knows how many years, there's so much that has changed, and I think it continues to change. And just kind of as a side note, I think that's a good thing for most people. Like, if you're not changing your mind semi-regularly over the years, you're probably not learning something new. So for me, like, when I was first getting along this road of looking at stuff into nutrition, you can kind of fall into the trap of, I think, diving into details that are largely irrelevant when you take a step back and take an overview of, number one, how humans just work, and then number two, of how our bodies actually deal with stuff nutritionally. So as an example, for me, when I first started looking at a lot of the stuff around, say, low carbohydrate diets, I was kind of very interested and intrigued by a lot of the stuff that was talked about from the perspective of, okay, let's look at human physiology and the effect of the hormone insulin, right? And so when people started talking about this, this obviously interested me because I'd been knowing about physiology and saying, oh, this sounds cool. And when you make a case for it on a very specific basis of zoning in on something like insulin and the effect of carbohydrates, the case then can be said of, you eat more carbohydrate, that puts up your insulin, and then that shuts off fat burning and promotes fat storage. So again, this is something that people, if they look at a lot of blogs or videos or whatever, will hear quite regularly. And when you look at that, that is technically true in a very acute sense. So in other words, when you do eat carbohydrates, insulin does go up. And when insulin goes up, it does actually turn or down regulate a lot of the processes related to releasing fat from a fat cell, and then also upregulates a lot of the processes related to fat storage. So in that sense, if you just took that snippet, you could jump to the conclusion that, oh, well, that means if I want to lose body fat, I have to keep insulin as low as humanly possible. So I need to keep my carbohydrates as low as possible. And the problem with that is that the way you look at physiology, it doesn't matter in that very acute sense of when you eat a meal. It matters in more chronic sense. What happens over 24 hours? What happens over a week, over a month? And these sharp elevations in insulin and their effect on these different processes really doesn't impact fat storage and release the way people think they do. In other words, just because your insulin has gone up because you've eaten carbohydrates doesn't mean you can't lose body fat. And so, like going back to what we said earlier, the main thing that's going to drive in a chronic terms over a number of weeks or months whether someone is losing body fat or gaining it is what their energy balance is like. Simply the old thing we've heard before, calories in, calories out. And I was definitely, I think, a bit too much bought in initially when I started hearing this stuff of thinking, okay, well then for most people, probably a low carbohydrate diet is something they should follow. And similarly, you can, again, I made mistakes around hearing a lot of stuff of how gluten can affect our health. You start to see like different research papers showing that when someone consumes gluten, it has all these effects that, and again, this is kind of getting into intestinal permeability and all these kind of clinical terms that people hear. But again, you have to take a step back and see, okay, what does that actually mean for someone's symptoms and someone's health? And then you start to see, well, for most people, it's probably not an issue. And so for me, that was a couple of things. I think that was a bit too harsh on gluten and a bit too much focused in on like a narrow view of how certain hormones work. There are just a couple that come to mind, but I think it's just a natural thing to fall into. And it's just being aware and being open to new information and we can change over time. So there are two that come to mind straight away.
I love it. There's a, I don't know if it's Darwin or an Einstein quote, but it's one of my favorites that you should give up one of your best loved ideas every year because that's the sign that you're growing. So it's cool to hear you saying that. It's a cool example of that as well. All right, last one, Danny, because I know how busy you are and your schedule's nuts at the minute. How has a failure or an apparent failure set you up for later success, or do you have a favorite failure of yours in any area of your life in terms of it might be academically, it might be fitness-wise, nutrition-wise, business-wise, anything that a particular failure that you love?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know if it's classed as a classic failure to me, but from the outside, it probably seems a pretty obvious one. And certainly at the time to my parents, it probably was in that my original degree was in, like I said, biology and physics education. I ended up teaching for a year, but pretty soon, like, by the time that year came to the end, I'd said, okay, I'm getting out of here. I don't want to do this. I want to go back and start my own thing, do this nutrition whole gig and get some education in that. And so, I mean, that could be something where I think at least traditionally people would look at, okay, look, you've spent 4 years of your life getting this degree. You've gone out and got a job that seems safe and secure. You've got all this holidays in the summer and you've done this and your parents are happy because you've got a nice job that's guaranteed wage. And now you're somehow throwing it away and failing at this to go and make up something and make money on the internet. So I mean, I think definitely to other people that can be seen as like failing at a teaching career, and maybe it is, but that has definitely been taking that leap and deciding and being lucky enough to realize that, okay, I don't need to force myself to do this if I don't want to. And there's ways to make a success out of stuff that you actually really love doing. Taking that has given me like everything that Sigma Nutrition is doing now and all that. And and that all stemmed from failing at being a teacher, I suppose.
Yeah, I love it. That's brilliant. Very similar. I was a primary school teacher for 4 years, so I know that feeling of making that switch. Danny, I want to say a massive thank you for coming on. As I said, I know how crazy your schedule is. Where is the best place for people to find out more about you?
Yes, I mean, the main hub is just at sigmanutrition.com. If they go there, they'll see all the podcasts, all the articles that we have up, deals of our coaching service, any podcast. They can just type in Sigma Nutrition Radio and it should pop up. And then I'm pretty easy to find on social media. So start on Facebook, they can either find the Sigma Nutrition page or my personal page there as well. And then Instagram as well, just Danny Lennon underscore Sigma Nutrition. And yeah, plenty of those places. I'm happy to take any questions. So
awesome. And guys, I'll be linking everything in the show notes as well. So if you're on the podcast or you're on any of my platforms, I'll have all Danny's social media, his website, and everything linked in the show notes as well. So you can just click on through. And if you're not listening to his podcast, definitely go get on that straight away as soon as you finish listening to this episode. Danny, massive thank you again. Catch up with you soon.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, man. It's been a pleasure to chat with you.